Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good Monday morning, everyone. And if you followed the news over the weekend, you heard the growing calls for impeachment. Not the impeachment of Donald Trump, although that has hardly stopped either. The impeachment of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, following new reporting in the New York Times about how many people at Yale in the 1980s saw or heard about two different acts of alleged sexual misconduct by Kavanaugh at the time, both allegedly exposing himself and allegedly ending with his penis being thrust at a woman in a way that would make the woman touch it, swatted away, as the Times put it, for one of the alleged incidents. So we now have at least Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and Julian Castro calling for Kavanaugh's impeachment. Harris tweeted this: "I sat through those hearings. Brett Kavanaugh lied to the U.S. Senate and, most importantly, to the American people. He was put on the court through a sham process, and his place on the court is an insult to the pursuit of truth and justice," unquote. Warren tweeted this: "Last year, the Kavanaugh nomination was rammed through the Senate without a thorough examination of the allegations against him. Confirmation is not exoneration, and these newest revelations are disturbing. Like the man who appointed him, Kavanaugh should be impeached." From Elizabeth Warren. And on MSNBC over the weekend, Julian Castro said this:
"Say, what's become clear is that he should be impeached. The House absolutely has the ability to impeach him. The question would be what the Senate would do. And, I want to know at this point, why did the FBI not follow up on all of these leads that they have? They didn't lift a finger to investigate it. And if they did bring some of that information to the attention of some of those Republican senators, why didn't those senators say anything?"
Julian Castro. So with that as a starting point, our first guest today is Manhattan and Brooklyn Congressman Gerald Nadler, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He's already in charge of the process that could lead to President Trump's impeachment. And as its name suggests, the Judiciary Committee also oversees the judiciary. Some of you may recall that last October, before the Democrats won control of the House, Nadler had said that if they did win, his committee would investigate Kavanaugh, after Nadler called the Kavanaugh confirmation process a whitewash. And just last month, you may have missed this, in August, Nadler requested records from the National Archives of Kavanaugh's activity working for President George W. Bush. During the confirmation process, Democrats said they were denied those records, which could reveal a record of prior views or political activity relating to abortion rights or other issues that could come before the court. So with all of that as prologue, Congressman Nadler, thanks so much for coming in today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be here.
Well, let's talk about two potential impeachments. Kavanaugh first. Did you read the New York Times article?
Yes, I did.
And can you explain your request last month to the National Archives regarding old Kavanaugh records?
Well, I thought that the Senate proceeding was a sham, that the senators who wanted to read it, namely the Democratic senators, the Republican senators seemed uninterested, should certainly have had the opportunity to read all the state papers detailing what Kavanaugh had done in the Justice Department and so forth, because that should certainly inform their judgment as to his fitness for appointment to the Supreme Court, and they were entitled to have that information. They weren't given it, which was one of the things that made the process a sham. And I thought that and that's why we've requested this, that we ought to get that information and make it available so people can see whether, and I don't know this to be the case, but whether in fact there was information there that might be that had it been public would have been disqualifying for the appointment or not. Secondly, now we have these allegations we've had these allegations before, but we've had further, one of them
is new in the Times. Says that was unreported previously.
Okay, so we've got a new allegation now. And what is crystal clear from the reporting, and we knew that at the time too, but is made more clear now, is that the FBI investigation was a sham. The FBI didn't investigate, didn't interview something like 25 witnesses on one of these and others, witnesses who wanted to be asked about it. And that's inexcusable. And apparently they didn't do it because they were told by the Senate majority not to do this investigation, which meant that was a sham. Now, we have the head of the FBI coming before our committee next month, and we're certainly going to ask him about this, and we're going to see where it goes from there.
One of the two alleged incidents in the Times story, as you just referenced, was the one made public at the time involving Kavanaugh at a party with a fellow student, the accuser in this case, Deborah Ramirez. The Times says she gave the FBI a list of what you just referred to, 25 potential corroborating witnesses, and the committee interviewed not, or the FBI, I should say, interviewed none of them. Can your committee do those interviews?
I suppose we could. I suppose we could, and maybe we should. But first things first, let's get the FBI head in. He's coming into the committee next month, and we'll certainly ask him about this investigation.
Well, what could you learn from him other than what they did or didn't do and why he says they did it? I mean, they're not going to go back, presumably, and interview these 25.
Well, for one thing, why didn't they do those interviews? It seems standard that they would do them. Were they told by the president not to do them? Were they told by the Senate majority leader not to do them? Were they told not to tell the American people, not to tell the Senate that they were deliberately not doing them? I presume that the investigation was represented to the senators as an investigation, not as a whitewash. We want to know. I mean, the FBI comes under our jurisdiction too. When they're doing a report on something like this, why do they not do an adequate one? Or do they do an adequate one except here?
Would the interviews themselves of the 25 potential corroborating witnesses fall under the jurisdiction of your committee? And if so, would there be any reason not to do them if you take them seriously?
We do not have jurisdiction to consider the confirming a nominee to a position to the Supreme Court or anything else. So from that point of view, it wouldn't fall under jurisdiction. But we do have jurisdiction with respect to other things, and certainly to the FBI and to the adequacy of what they do. And the question, it might fall under a jurisdiction. We'd have to take a very careful look at that.
All right. And the other allegation, the other alleged incident, also involving Kavanaugh, allegedly, was him pulling down his pants at a party. But the Times describes the claims about that made by a different former classmate, a man who said he was a witness named Max Steyer, as that friends, not Kavanaugh himself, pushed his penis into the hands of a female student, according to the Times. The student declined to be interviewed, and friends told the Times that she does not recall the episode. Is that enough of a basis on which to open an investigation into that alleged episode, or is that too sketchy?
I don't know. We'd have to take a look at that. Remember, the jurisdiction that we would have with respect to a sitting Supreme Court nominee is, did he lie to the Senate? These deeds that he allegedly did years ago would be very relevant to a senator voting for or against his nomination. But once he's there, what's relevant now is, did he lie to the Senate?
So when last October, before the election in which the Democrats took control of the House, you said that if you did take control of the House, your committee would investigate Kavanaugh after what you called a whitewash of a confirmation process. Are you keeping, if we consider that a promise, are you keeping that promise?
Well, we're going to determine that after we, as I said, the FBI, we're going to question the FBI director about this whole thing when he comes before our committee next month. And then we'll make other determinations. We are concentrating our resources on determining whether to impeach the president. Personally, I think the president ought to be impeached, but we have to concentrate on that for the next few months.
And we will get to that. But those tweets over the weekend from Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris concluded that they they already think the evidence is there to impeach Justice Kavanaugh, Julian Castro too. So are you saying, since that would fall under the jurisdiction of your committee, that your first step in investigating the possibility of that process would be the hearing with the FBI director next month?
Well, we have the hearing already scheduled in general. We will take the opportunity to question him about the adequacy of the investigation and about anything else with respect to that nomination. And then we'll have to see where we go from there.
So you're saying nothing before that with respect to Kavanaugh?
Right.
That's
the next step, obviously.
That would be the next step. So you don't have a position today agreeing or disagreeing with Warren and Harris and Castro
Kavanaugh
warrants impeachment?
No. I think we have to... We have to look into this a lot more before you can make that judgment. Before we can make that judgment,
here's a clip of.
Remember, our action. It's one thing for a presidential candidate or anybody else to say it's their opinion that something should be done. We have official jurisdiction, and whether to exercise that jurisdiction is a much more. It's a consequential action which we have to be able to justify, and we will start. We will. As I said, we're going to start looking into the adequacy of the investigation. Upon which the confirmation was premised when the FBI director comes before us next month.
Right. Are you at all, you know, considering how much pressure there is on you to go faster in the impeachment or impeachment inquiry with respect to President Trump, would you be concerned based on your answer so far that there would be a wing, or if you want to call it that, or a group of Democrats who would think that you're not taking the Kavanaugh allegations and the positions of some of the presidential hopefuls seriously enough and acting aggressively enough?
I don't think so. It's too early to form a judgment one way or the other. We're going to start looking into this. We're going to start with the FBI director coming in front of us next month. And we have our hands full with impeaching the president right now, and that's going to take up... our limited resources and time for a while.
And from the other side of the aisle, here's a clip of Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas yesterday on ABC This Week.
You know what? I bet you the next Democratic debate, they'll all be saying impeach Kavanaugh, impeach Trump. There's nobody they don't want to impeach. And at some point, they just have to let the anger go and recognize that the Democratic process actually moves on.
Ted Cruz on ABC. So to Republicans and others asking the question, why shouldn't the public consider even the request for the Kavanaugh records from the Bush administration a politically motivated fishing expedition?
A Supreme Court nominee a Supreme Court justice is nominated and confirmed for a lifetime appointment. It's a very consequential act, obviously. Arguably, a Supreme Court candidate can have as much influence as a president over a period of time. And therefore, the process, in a president, we have a whole election process. In a Supreme Court nomination, you have the president appointing someone and the Senate voting to confirm or not to confirm after presumably looking into it adequately. The process by which the Senate looked into this, there were very serious allegations made against Justice Kavanaugh, was a sham. The FBI investigation was apparently a sham, and we have a duty to look into that question.
But there's nothing in particular that you know that you're looking for that's already raised a question about Kavanaugh in your mind from the Bush era records?
Oh, no. Nothing that we know of. But normally, most Supreme Court nominees don't have allegations of sexual misconduct thrust at them. Most Supreme Court nominees, all you have are their state papers and offices they've held before, their opinions written in law review articles or in judicial opinions if they were on lower courts, and that's what you look at. And that's what the Senate ought to look at. And here, it was denied to the Senate in I think, an unprecedented way. And we ought to update, we ought to reveal to the public what was denied to the Senate. And the public can judge. Maybe there's nothing there. Maybe there are things there that would have clearly said, oh, my God, we can't vote for this guy. And maybe not. But the public's entitled to know that.
And that would have been normal in your case.
It would have.
In your opinion.
It would have been normal in any serious nomination case.
Congressman and House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler, our guest on WNYC, our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you live in his Brooklyn and Manhattan district or anyone else today, since we're talking about issues of national importance, 212-433-9692. And let's move on to the president. There's been a lot of media discussion, as you know, about whether you're walking a fine line and a confusing political line with the new rules that your committee passed on Thursday, enabling hearings that could lead to impeachment, but without opening a formal impeachment inquiry.
That's not correct.
Okay.
That is not correct, and it is very frustrating to see the press repeat that same mistake over and over again.
What's incorrect there?
What is incorrect is when you said we are not involved in an impeachment inquiry. We are considering, we are involved in an investigation to determine whether to recommend articles of impeachment to the House. That is what we're doing. The term impeachment investigation, the term impeachment inquiry have no legal meaning. They're shorthand. They're shorthand for an investigation into determining whether to recommend articles of impeachment. That's what we're doing. And we're doing it officially. The committee voted specifically for procedures last week. One of those procedures empowers me to designate any particular hearing of the committee or of subcommittees to be an impeachment hearing. I have designated the hearing we're holding tomorrow as an impeachment hearing. And that's what we're doing. And there's no ambiguity about that.
Well, then why is everyone so confused? Why would all the major networks be reporting it in a different way?
I have said this in very certain terms as many times as I can, as definitely as I can now. Other people have, for various reasons, been more reluctant. They've been reluctant to use the term impeachment inquiry or impeachment investigation, but as I've said, those terms have no official meaning. Now, the Republicans are throwing up a smokescreen. They're saying that since the House did not vote to authorize the committee to have an impeachment investigation, there is not an impeachment investigation. That's simply incorrect. Most impeachment investigations held since the 1946 Congressional Reauthorization Act have not begun and have never had House authorization votes. They began in the Judiciary Committee. The two presidential impeachments we've had, Clinton and Nixon, both did have House authorization results.
Votes,
because in those days, the committee lacked the ability to issue certain kinds of subpoenas and to hold depositions unless authorized by the whole House. Those rules were changed about 15 years ago. We do not need a House vote for that. And in any event, in the Nixon impeachment, the impeachment investigation started, and 6 months later, the House authorized it. But we don't need a House authorization now. We have full authorization to do this this impeachment investigation. That's what we are doing, and we will determine either to vote articles of impeachment to the full House, or we won't. Now, some people have said ignorantly that, well, until we decide whether to vote that's not an impeachment inquiry. But that's ridiculous. You decide whether to vote articles of impeachment at the end of an impeachment investigation, not at the beginning.
On not going for an authorization by the full House, we know that there are different opinions and different politics with respect to different members of the House Democratic Caucus. There's what Speaker Pelosi has said. She still calls impeachment divisive and warns against action that doesn't have broad bipartisan support. We have a release from the other day from Staten Island and Brooklyn Congressman Democrat Max Rose, headlined Why I Oppose Trump Impeachment. I guess this is an op-ed from the Staten Island Advance. And he says there's no doubt that this administration is one of the most corrupt in history, and goes on to make other charges, but writes, but pursuing a partisan impeachment process won't address any of those serious issues. The truth is, impeachment will only tear our country further apart, and we will see no progress on the enormous challenges that we face as a nation. Impeachment will not fix our roads and bridges or lower the cost of drugs, and he goes on from there.
I obviously disagree with that. As a practical matter, we have to have much greater consensus on impeachment than we do now in order to vote it, for the very simple reason, number one, you don't want to tear the country apart. But number two, you need 218 votes on the House floor to pass a resolution of impeachment. There is a maximum of 236 possible votes, namely 235 Democrats and Justin Amash. The Republicans will not consider it, no matter what the evidence. We have to, through the hearings that we're going to hold now, the very aggressive series of hearings on various offenses committed by the president, possible grounds for impeachment, starting with tomorrow's hearing, we have to show that there are adequate grounds for impeachment, that there are imperative grounds for impeachment, and convince people. If that happens, if people are convinced after the hearings that the president should be impeached, then we'll be able to get the votes. If that doesn't happen, we won't be able to get the votes. But to the other point, the merits, why impeachment is necessary. Now I'm talking in my personal opinion. My personal opinion, impeachment is imperative, not because he's going to be removed from office, the Senate won't do that, but because we have to vindicate the Constitution. We have to show that the kind of self-dealing enrichment that this president's engaged in, violating the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, that the kind of public corruption he's been involved in, that the kind of obstruction of justice that the Mueller report documented, of five instances of which met all the requirements for an indictment, and the president would have been indicted for those five instances had the Justice Department not had a policy of not indicting presidents no matter what. We have to show that this kind of behavior, trashing the Constitution, trashing all the norms which guarantee democratic government, aggrandizing power to the presidency and destroying the separation of powers, and thereby leading the president to become more and more of a tyrant, cannot be tolerated. And it cannot be normalized. And we have to make sure that the next president, or the one after him or her, knows there's a real penalty to be paid. That's why the impeachment is necessary, even if we cannot get a vote in the Senate, my opinion.
So with all of that, in your opinion, and with all that Mueller laid out, as you referenced, with the U.S. attorney in New York already accusing Trump in court of directing the hush money activity and cover-up of that Michael Cohen is in prison mm-hmm. for today, and on the corruption, Trump himself publicly promoting foreign governments paying to use his hotels, what don't you already know to make an impeachment decision on?
Oh, I think we already know enough.
So why a whole series of hearings?
For two reasons, two practical reasons. Number one, because the American people have to be educated to this, and they have to be convinced. We cannot impeach the president against the will of the American people. We cannot do it for two reasons, which I said before. Number one, it would tear the country apart, and it would be seen as undemocratic. Number two, without the support of the people, without public support, we won't get the votes in the House. So it's a very practical principled reason. Right now, the American people haven't heard most of this. They haven't heard, who knows what the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution is. This was the basic anti-corruption clause placed in the Constitution. It's never been talked about because no president has ever violated it, except this president violates it all the time, with his self-dealing and personal enrichment, and we have to bring that out. The obstruction, the Attorney General spent several months lying about what the Mueller report was in and told people, and the president did too, no obstruction, no collusion, no obstruction. Well, that's not what the report found. We should bring in the witnesses and have them testify and have people hear the witnesses to the president obstructing justice and committing serious crimes in obstructing justice. The hush money payments to the women is not a question of hush money payments. Some people say, well, so big deal. But those payments were violations of campaign finance law designed to defraud the American people by denying them knowledge which may have been relevant to their decision on who to vote for. That's why we have these campaign finance laws. So there's fraud in the election, there's corruption, of obstruction of justice, tremendous abuses of power. I'll say one other abuse of power, which hasn't gotten much publicity at all. Article 3 of the Nixon impeachment was that the president defied congressional subpoenas. This president has defied all congressional subpoenas and said in advance, I'm going to defy all congressional subpoenas, and has instructed people not to show up. Now, why is that so important? That's important because Congress is supposed to be a check on the presidency. And if you take the powers of Congress and you say, we won't permit Congress to investigate, we will deny all witnesses, we will defy all subpoenas, then there's no check on the power of the presidency. The framers set up the Constitution to say that the people represented in Congress have to have a major say, and they did. Their greatest fear was the president shouldn't be evolve into a tyrant. And this president has systematically overturned many of the protections against the president turning into a tyrant, who's taken powers away from Congress. He's denied Congress the ability to investigate. That itself is impeachable because it destroys the separation of powers and increases the power of the presidency into that of a tyrant and goes in that direction. And that's intolerable.
Derek, on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC with New York City Congressman and House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler. Derek, I see you're going to raise the new reporting and new calls for impeachment of Justice Kavanaugh. Hi, Derek.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I'm a constituent of the chairman and voted for him on every occasion I've had in the district.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The issue I want to bring to bear is, or at least to your attention, if you're not already aware of it, is that Kavanaugh, during his Senate hearings for his Supreme Court nomination, stated emphatically one of the things he was concerned about was the accusations of Dr. Blasey Ford was to destroy his reputation and his ability to continue to teach at his at their alma mater law school. I think it was for summer sessions, but some kind of temporary part-time teaching thing he was doing prior to the hearings, and that one of the reasons he wanted to clear his name so he could continue to teach one of his great loves. After his induction into the court, something happened at the law school, and they announced that based upon any student allegations, there had to be a mandatory investigation, which, by the way, he had applied or made reference to going back to teach again after he was so-called cleared at the Senate investigation. And after the school announced a mandatory investigation on any student complaint, he withdrew his submission to continue to teach there. And
so what's your question, Derek? Forgive me for time.
The bottom line is, it sounds like he was lying about the issues, and that what he really wanted to do was evade any serious investigation of his activities at the law school.
I see. You're saying that's why he withdrew from teaching?
Correct.
I see. Familiar with anything related to that?
No, I'm not, and I really can't comment on that. I don't know anything about his teaching or withdrawing from further teaching.
Okay. Mike in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for the time, and thank you for Mr. Adler coming on and sharing his time with us as well. I just have a quick question. With all the
investigations,
impeachment investigations, what has Mr. Adler done for his constituents in Brooklyn and Manhattan? You know, I don't think this is top priority for those people that are dealing with high Medicare costs, high medical, what is it called, prescription costs, and housing going through the roof. People can't even afford to live in their own neighborhood.
Well,
what has he done for his constituents in, within the last 2 years of him going after Trump? Thank you.
Well, actually, quite a bit. First, in no particular order, we passed out of our committee. I thought we were going to talk about this. We passed out of our committee, and the House passed very strong background checks legislation back in February. It's sitting in Moscow Mitch's desk in the Senate. They won't pass it at the moment for very strong background checks on guns. We reported out of committee bills that I stewarded last week to ban high-capacity magazines, to give relatives of the and friends of people who show instability the ability to flag that so that they can't get guns, and to add misdemeanor hate crime people convicted of misdemeanor hate crimes to the list of people who can't get guns. And next week, the 25th, we're going to be holding hearings on assault weapons ban. On we passed the. We reauthorized the Violence Against Women Act and expanded that.
That's
we
passed Judiciary Committee also.
Yes. Everything I'm talking about is stuff that I pushed through the Judiciary Committee. We passed the bill that Carol Maloney and I carried for many years. We renewed it, the bill for 9/11 health care. And that bill deals not only with first responders. They get all the publicity. But it also provides health care and it provides for victims' compensation for survivors, that is to say, people who lived in the neighborhood or worked there or went to school there. So we extended that bill for until 2090. I passed it Carolyn and I passed it a number of years ago. We did we passed a bill the Senate has not actually the bill I just talked about is passed through both houses. We passed a bill out of our committee last week to ban forced arbitration. Anytime you sign a contract to get a credit card, to buy a television, to an employment contract, in the fine print these days, they have a clause that you give up your right to go to court in case you're discriminated against for sexual or, for sex or for other reasons, or in case you're cheated in some way and it has to go to forced arbitration, you have to give up your right in court. You can't do class actions.
So the investigations get all the attention, but you're doing all these other things.
Yes, we're carrying a full load. We're having we increased, I was instrumental in increasing the appropriation for low-income housing for Section 8. And for housing for people with AIDS, over the years I've done that consistently, and I've taken, along with Nidhi Velasquez, I've taken the lead in that. So these are some of the things. I can think of a lot of other things.
We're just about out of time. I want to touch two things very briefly. We have Governor Cuomo standing by next. He is announcing an emergency ban on flavored vaping products, and Governor Cuomo is going to join us in just a minute on that. But two things. Number one, President Trump says he's locked and loaded. I think he tweeted that phrase with respect to Iran after the attack on Saudi Arabia oil infrastructure that was so major that the U.S. anyway blames Iran for. Does Congress have a role to play here if the president wants to stage military attacks against Iran or Iranian assets?
Well, the Constitution says that Congress declares war, not the president. Now, that over the years, because of imminent national security threats, presidents have assumed the right to respond to those imminent national security threats. But an attack on Saudi Arabia is not an imminent national security threat to the United States.
On Iran? Their attack on even if they did it.
Even if they did
it.
Maybe we ought to go to war with Iran. Maybe not. But that decision should be up to Congress, and it would be very wrong for the president to make such a decision and to attack Iran on his own. He does not have that authority under the Constitution, period. And there is no conceivable way that an attack on a third-party country can be read as an imminent threat so that Congress doesn't have time to deal with this.
And lastly, back to the Trump investigation, I see you have former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski cited by Robert Mueller as being asked by Trump to take action that could be considered obstruction of justice, scheduled for this week. Is Lewandowski...
Tomorrow.
Is he showing up?
I do believe he will show up, yes. I think he's probably going to improperly exert executive privilege on some of the questions we'll ask him, but we'll see.
What's the biggest thing you hope the public learns from Corey Lewandowski?
Well, Corey Lewandowski is a direct fact witness whose testimony was quoted in the Mueller report to the point that after the president found out that he personally, that is the president, was the subject of was a target of the investigation, he then called in Lewandowski and told him, and Lewandowski is a private citizen at this point, and in fact, always was a private citizen, never worked for the government. He called in private citizen Lewandowski and told him, go to the Attorney General Sessions and tell him to make a public statement lying to the public. Tell him to make a public statement that it was in the campaign throughout the entire period, that there was no contact with the Russians by anybody in the campaign, and that consequently, Lewandowski should instruct Sessions that he should direct that the investigation would only apply to future interference with future elections. In other words, stop investigating the president. Now, that would be a very deliberate obstruction of justice, obstructing an investigation for personal reasons to protect himself. And that's a crime, a very serious crime.
And that was in the Mueller report, except mm-hmm. the conclusion that it's a crime, and you're hoping to get it out of Corey Lewandowski's mouth.
Well, I don't know that he'll say it's a crime, but it's clearly a crime.
But that narrative.
That narrative, yes.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, House Judiciary Committee Chairman, of course, Democrat from parts of Brooklyn and Manhattan, we always appreciate your time. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.